The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Michael P. Allen presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near and you will be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and before we get down to the business at hand, on behalf of the board, and I'm here with Senator Parker to my right and Senator Jacob to my left, we want to thank Tennessee University College of Law for its invitation to come. Everybody, the students, the staff, have been incredibly helpful over the last few days in making this event happen. I also want to thank Council for making the trip down here. Of course, they all came from the north, so I'm not sure whether I should be thanking them or thanking me, but that's another day, and I specifically want to thank Dean Barrows, Professor Cox, Professor Alexander, and everybody at the Veterans Law Institute for making us feel so welcome. So today, we are convened here this afternoon to consider arguments in the case of Melvin L. Boyd against Douglas A. Collins, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 22-5998. Would counsel beginning with appellate counsel make your appearance for the record, please?
Amy Odom, and beginning at counsel table is Zachary Stoltz of the law firm of Chisholm, Chisholm, and Kilpatrick.
Thank you. And Ms. Odom, do you want to receive, or you want to reserve 10 minutes for a rebuttal?
Yes, please, Your Honor.
All right, we'll do that. Secretary's counsel?
Morgan Morrison, the meeting is out.
Thank you very much. So, you can begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Chief Judge Allen, and may it please the Board. The Board denied Mr. Lloyd statutory right to one review on appeal to the Secretary when it demanded he submit new and relevant evidence and refused to adjudicate the merits of his initial claim for compensation for his left eye disability. Because the Board decision was the terminal event in Mr. Lloyd's continuous pursuit of his initial claim for compensation, the Board was required to review the merits of that claim, not some new separate claim for re-adjudication of for the left eye. This is the reading of the law that is best supported by the statutes, the text structure, and context of the statutes, and it is the reading of the law that best promotes the goals of the AMA of client payment control and choice and efficiency in VA claims adjudication.
Correct. I need to jump in early, but let me just ask this. So, there's an initial decision, and at that point, a claimant has three choices. Right?
Right.
Okay. So one of them is to seek higher level review, in which you don't get to add any new evidence. It's basically, hey, let's have a more senior person look this over.
Right.
Okay. Second, you can go to the board. Right? Okay, and you make a whole bunch of choices at the board, but for our purposes, higher level review board, and then the third choice is a supplemental claim under section 51 away.
Sure.
Okay. So, what role does the submission of new and relevant evidence have with respect to the supplemental?
If new and relevant evidence is submitted or secured in the supplemental claim, then the AOJ will re-adjudicate. So the supplemental claim is simply a request for review of the initial claim within the AOJ, the agency of original jurisdiction.
See, that's the part of your brief that I'm trying to understand precisely why, right? Because I blank on the statute. Is it 5109C, the one that says 5104C? These are the three things you get to do, right? And the statute says the three options. Right. So the higher level review is a review by its very terms, right? The board is the appeal of the decision, right?
Mm-hmm.
But a supplemental claim under your view, it serves two purposes, does it? Meaning, one, if I file a supplemental claim, and I submit evidence that the AOJ, the agency of original jurisdiction, I'm going to try to use long terms and not abbreviations for everybody, governments love abbreviations, the AOJ says it's new and relevant, then it gets re-adjudicated for a new decision, right?
Right.
But under your view, if the evidence you submit is not new and relevant, then you get to have a review of the initial decision by the supplemental claim?
No. The AOJ would not review the initial claim, which is an adjudication of the initial claim. It's 3.2501, the VA's regulation that interprets Section 5108, says that the AOJ will just, the agency of original jurisdiction will just issue a decision saying new and relevant evidence is not submitted. If the agency of original jurisdiction leaves that new and relevant evidence has been submitted or secured, then they will re-adjudicate the claim.
Aren't you then functionally doing what 5104C says you can't do, which is effectively pursue two things at the same time? In other words, you could, Mr. Lloyd, when I say you, and I'm talking to the Secretary, I don't mean you, I mean the Secretary, Secretary Collins, and for you, I'll be Mr. Lloyd. But Mr. Lloyd could have gotten exactly what you're asking the board to have done here by, instead of choosing a supplemental claim, choosing the board for you.
Right, but Congress...
All that, right? So, really what you're saying here is, I can seek a supplemental claim, I can submit evidence, and I get two bags for the buck, because if the evidence is new and relevant, I get a re-adjudication and a new decision.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not, it doesn't matter, because even though I didn't appeal to the board as one of my options, I can appeal the decision that says no new and relevant evidence. This doesn't mean you're wrong, right? I mean, you can appeal from that decision, but the issue that is being reviewed at the board is not limited to new and relevant evidence. It includes the merits of the additional claim. I'm just trying to understand that that's what you're functionally saying.
This is our brand new world, Judge Allen. Congress created it so that the veteran does have multiple options. And frankly, to bounce around at the AOJ for infinity, submitting supplemental claims to trying to develop the record to its optimum, hopefully for a grant, if not a grant, so that it's fully developed by the time it gets to the board, and duty to assist is no longer available, and there are very limited options for submitting additional evidence. We're moving away from the legacy system, which in the legacy system, what you're saying would make more sense, right? Like, you can't have your cake and eat it too. You're either going to file a claim to reopen, or you're going to go to the board and ask for the board to review the regional office's decision. But when the AMA came to light, Congress created multiple more options for veterans with the hopes that they would develop the claim to the office.
So, in theory, you could submit a supplemental claim. I'm just trying to explore that I understand fully what you're saying. You could submit a supplemental claim in which you submitted nothing.
Yes.
And effectively secure the same thing that you would have been able to secure by filing a notice of disagreement.
Yes. Yes. You could submit nothing, number one, because the judicial assist does still apply to the VA. So the VA has to go out and get existing records, right? And then those existing records might be what's necessary to develop the claim to the optimum before it goes, or hopefully never goes to court, because hopefully the new evidence will be enough to, for re-adjudication and allowance. But that is the system that Congress created. The point of the new system is to increase claimant choice and control, and so the claimant has the choice. So I want to go directly to the board with the record that I have right now, knowing that I'm not going to get any assistance from the board in developing additional evidence. Also, frankly, knowing that I might be sitting there for three years waiting for a court decision. Or do I want to try to get some more evidence, try to get the VA to help me to get these records, and get it all in the record before it goes to the board? Or maybe you never get to the board again, because the hope is you don't get to the board, right? Because you have additional evidence with a supplemental claim that will result in an allowance of of the claim. And I think that the statutes that most directly support this reading are 5104C, subsection A, and the right to successive review options, to select successive review options on the same claim. And also 7105C2 says that if a notice of disagreement is not filed within a year, so if you don't go to the board within a year, the claim still remains alive if you file one of the other 5104C review options. And I think that there's language in there that makes really clear that Congress intended that it's the mere filing of the supplemental claim, not the submission or securing of new and relevant evidence, that keeps the claim alive. And you can see that by looking, comparing the language to 7105C1 says that if you file an HLR request within a year.
A higher level review.
And it results in re-adjudication or allowance, the claim stays alive. That re-adjudication and allowance language is missing from subsection 2, which has much broader language as otherwise permitted under 5108. If Congress, the only way that you get re-adjudication and allowance under 5108 is if you submit or secure new and relevant evidence. So if Congress intended that it is the new and relevant evidence that keeps the claim alive, they would have used that same language in subsection 2. So the omission of that language in subsection C2 is quite important here.
What do you make of the fact that the statute that Congress titled supplemental claim doesn't really talk about this, 5108? What do you make of that?
What I think is really important about the language in 5108 is that it also makes a distinction between the supplemental claim itself and the new and relevant evidence. It says if new and relevant evidence is submitted or secured with a supplemental claim. So it makes that distinction. Also, the supplement, the 5108 says that the secretary will re-adjudicate the claim. And the VA itself has interpreted that language to mean the agency of original jurisdiction. That's in 38 CFR 3.2501, the preamble, which says that if new and relevant evidence is submitted, the agency of original jurisdiction, not the board, the agency of original jurisdiction, will re-adjudicate the claim. And that's consistent with 7104A, the board's
jurisdiction. Can you just explain to me why that's important for your argument? I'm sure I just missed it.
Because it's not the board who does the re-adjudication of the claim. It's the agency of original jurisdiction. So if you file a supplemental claim, you continue to pursue, even if the administrator, the agency of original jurisdiction gets it wrong and says there's not new and relevant evidence, and you appeal back to the board, and the board says, well, actually, there is new and relevant evidence, it still has to go back to the agency of original jurisdiction. Because it's the agency of original jurisdiction that does the re-adjudication, not the board. The board reviews claims and appeals. It doesn't do initial adjudication of claims.
And so you were saying that the main problem that you have with the Secretary's interpretation of the law is the absence of a longer view on appeal, or if it's more than that, what can you list the things that are wrong with the Secretary's interpretation?
Well, first, we think the Secretary's interpretation violates 5104C(a) and the right to successive review options. Under the Secretary's reading of the law, once the veteran submits a supplemental claim and continues pursuit, the appeal book, so to speak, is closed on the initial claim. That veteran can never get to the board on that initial claim unless and until the veteran is able to submit or VA is able to secure new and relevant evidence.
Now, but that's not that different from legacy. I mean, just overall, because a veteran who didn't appeal to the board under legacy would have had to reopen, and it became final, would have had to reopen.
And that's true. Well, two things. First of all, that is still true under, it is still true under the AMA that if you get to the board first and the board adjudicates the claim, then you will always need new and relevant evidence because 7104E makes clear that once the board has reviewed the claim, it cannot be reopened and re-adjudicated without new and relevant evidence. But it's everything that happens before you get to the board that is changed under AMA. So we would respectfully submit that it's not appropriate in AMA to think in terms of legacy. Well, in legacy, if you didn't appeal to the board, you had to submit new and material evidence. But Congress changed what happens before you get to the board. Now you have continuous pursuit. If you don't, if the supplemental claim fails, because you didn't submit new and relevant evidence, you still have the option to get to the board on the initial claim.
Can I just, so that is one flaw in the Secretary's interpretation of the law, the lack of successive review options, more constrained than you think is in the law. And then there's also the lack of one that you want to appeal that facility to do that if you choose supplemental. What else can you just list these? Or is that all?
Well, we also think it frustrates the AMA goals of claims adjudication efficiency because it requires a claimant who really wants board review ultimately on the initial claim to make a really hard decision up front. Do I want to try to supplement the claim? Supplement the record, or do I take my chances on the record that I got? And again, because of that limiting principle in 7104E, then that record will always have to come up with the irrelevant evidence for re-adjudication of the claim. So we think it frustrates the goal of efficiency because it frustrates the incentive that Congress built into the system for the claimants to have the record fully developed before going to the board.
Well, I think there was a higher level of review. So if you have an initial decision that's now on whatever the issue was, and you choose a higher level of review, the higher level of review also says no, but for a different reason. Under your interpretation of this, would then, if you appeal to the board following the higher level of review, could you say, as an appellant, I'm not going to contest what the higher level review did, their reason. I'm going to focus on the reason of denial in the initial decision. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I think I do, but the board has an obligation to review the claim, the appeal, the matter, de novo. So it's not just looking at the HLR decision, the reasons for the HLR decision, or the reasons for the initial decision.
But under your view, that would be permissible, right? Because you have one review of appeal,
right?
And the initial decision is still in play, right? It wouldn't come up as much as your view, I think, on a supplemental claim, right? But in theory, that would still be, right? That the reasoning would still be out there.
Well, let me just make sure I'm clear about something. I don't think the board reviews decisions. The board reviews matters on appeal. The matter, in my view, is the claim. So the board reviews all the issues that come up in a claim on review. So it's not necessarily looking at the reason why it was previously denied, which is another thing that I think supports our reading of the law.
Well, but something's like sort of, factual findings that are made that may or may not be favorable. So you could imagine a scenario where, given the logic of the higher level review, they don't reach certain factual issues. There's only not another path, right? But the logic of the initial decision requires it to make certain findings. And maybe a claimant likes those findings back. And so it says, listen, forget about the higher level review. I want, in terms of the binding nature of the findings, the claim you're reviewing is really the initial one. You don't have to worry about the supplemental, the higher level review, the second decision, because it's just saying, I'm trying to explore the notion that the initial decision is always in play. Right?
Again, it's not the initial decision. It's the initial claim. So it doesn't really matter what the HLR, it matters if they said something, if they made a favorable finding. If the HLR or the agency of original jurisdiction made a favorable finding, that's all that matters. The making of favorable findings don't necessarily affect the board's de novo review.
But even the veteran's understanding of the way the system works doesn't, aren't both the initial claim and the supplemental claim for consideration and adjudication by the board? It's not just back to the initial claim. New and relevant evidence is included in 5104CA1 as well as B, right?
Yes, but in our scenario, Mr. Boyd's case, the only thing that was at play was an initial claim. There wasn't a supplemental claim at play. The 5104CA supplemental claim is the review option. It's different than a 5104CB claim. What the board needs to do, and what it did in this case and all in the other cases that we submitted in our brief, is look to see what is the first action, what is the first link in the chain of continuous pursuit. And that is what they're reviewing. Everything that happens along the way can inform the board's analysis in terms of favorable findings, evidence that was submitted or developed during along the way. But ultimately, what they're always looking at is what was the first thing in the chain of continuous pursuit. And that's what they're reviewing. Sometimes it is a 5104CD supplemental link. And in those cases, they absolutely do need to find that there was new relevant evidence before they can re-adjudicate the claim or send it back to the agency of original jurisdiction pursuant to 3.2501 for re-adjudication of the claim. But for our purposes, it was an initial claim. What Mr. Boyd filed was an initial claim, and that's what the board was supposed to review, and it refused to do that here. So we asked the court to reverse the board's finding that what was before it was a claim for re-adjudication and remand the matter for the board to review the merits of the initial claim.
Thank you. Morris?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Your Honors, Appellant's argument is based on fundamental misunderstanding of the nature of appeals and supplemental claims. A few points here. First, Your Honor, it is not claims or matters that are appealed. It is decisions that are appealed. The decision on appeal in this case was the November 2020 AOJ decision on the Appellant's supplemental claim. It denied re-adjudication of the claim for left-eye disability benefits as a new federal benefits. Two, Your Honor. Supplemental claims are, by definition, essentially claims or benefits that were previously denied. The claim language of 5108 requires new and relevant evidence to be submitted to the supplemental claim as a precondition for the adjudication of that previously denied claim, regardless of review or regardless of whether the previously denied claim was subject to a final or non-final decision, i.e., whether it was supplemental claims filed under 5104CA or B.
How could the board assess whether the veteran presented new and relevant evidence with respect to the veteran's left eye claim without considering the entirety of that claim, including both the evidence considered by the regional office of the agency of original jurisdiction and the additional evidence?
The board understood the basis of the denial. I'm not sure that the issue here concerns whether the board could look at the earlier submitted and considered evidence to see if it was whether it was completed or not. The question here is what issue was before the board. The issue that was before the board was the issue decided by the AOJ in the decision, that issue being whether there was new evidence.
But how do they adjudicate that issue without considering the run of the evidence from the beginning to the time they get the case?
I'm not sure it's an issue that the board would be prohibited from considering the entirety of the evidence for the purpose of assessing whether the newly submitted, whether the evidence submitted in connection with the supplemental claim was new and relevant. But that's distinct from considering that evidence for the purposes of assessing the merits of the underlying claim that was denied in the merits of 2019.
applicable this course. I was going to at least take issue or press you on a point that you just said before the Judge Jacobs question, and that is, you specifically just said that 5108 requires that new material evidence be submitted. And I was trying to press your opposing counsel on that as well. So where do you get that from 5108? Which in my mind is a little bit vague on the point, even though it's called supplemental claim. You would think it would explain the definition of a supplemental claim. So where are you getting the it requires new material evidence? I'm looking at the language of the statute right now.
The language they said new relevant evidence must be presented for security in order for the secretary to be required to re-adjudicate the claim.
If it's submitted, then the secretary must or shall re-adjudicate.
And 5108 has to be written in this context. Part of that context is 7105C. 7105C specifically states that no NLP, no disagreement is filed within 1 year of the agency decision. That decision becomes final, and the claim cannot become re-adjudicated or allowed unless it provides three circumstances. And one of those is highlighted for you under 5104B. One of them is the Judge Secretary's regulations, which generally consider extensions of time for filing this disagreement. And the third is under provisions of 5108. So 7105C serves as a limiting force on what may or may not be done. And so the only source of authority to re-adjudicate a supplemental claim is 5108. 5108 requires new relevant evidence to be presented or secured. So now the secretary to re-adjudicate, the secretary otherwise has no basis of source of authority to re-adjudicate supplemental.
In the court's Greer decision in 2023, we held that Chapter 51 is dedicated to those aspects of the VA disability system under the province of the regional office of VA security jurisdiction. So Section 5104 is expanded notice requirements didn't apply to the board, which is governed by Chapter 71. Doesn't that same principle apply here and lead to the conclusion that the board must base its decision on the appeal on consideration of all the evidence and material record that's 7104A requires?
No, Your Honor. I point to a number of statutory provisions, including 7104, 7105. Again, 7105 requires a notice of disagreement to be submitted in response to the agency decision within 8 years. No notice of disagreement was filed in response to the 2019 AOJ decision to deny the veterans' claim on the merits. The NOD being the jurisdiction document was an NOD filed with respect to a particular decision of the AOJ, that decision being that the adjudication is not permitted. That is.
Well, in Virgo, we decided that 7105 is not jurisdictional. One. And secondly, you don't agree that with Calhoun and the other cases that say a supplemental claim keeps the forestalls finality?
Your Honor, respectfully, I agree that the time limit is found to be not jurisdictional. But the notice of disagreement itself, to my knowledge, of the court is not that. It's not a jurisdiction in front of the user. But nevertheless, there's no dispute here that the appellant's underlying claim has not been finally adjudicated. That is clear, but that's also not an issue here. The idea of continuous pursuit, the idea of the non-finality of prior adjudications concerns the effective date. Under 5110, which is not relevant at this point.
And on that point, just so I can understand the Secretary's position, to be clear, this is a hypothetical in the sense that it is a future. Things I'm going to say here are future things, okay? So I get that. But if we assume number one, just assume that we ruled in the Secretary's favor on this appeal. Number two, assume that within 1 year of that decision, Mr. Lloyd filed a supplemental claim under 5108. Assume that he submitted evidence that the AOJ determined to be new and relevant, and then the AOJ granted the claim. Under those circumstances, again, all looking to the future, they're hypothetical. The effect effective date of that grant would go back to the date of the initial appointment under 5110 under the AMA. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Okay, and Secretary is on board with that.
Yes, the secretary position here is not that the county's claim has been highly adjudicated. The county continues to continuously pursue benefits for a left-eye disability. The question here is whether, from this point forward, what he needed. And what he needed was new relevant evidence, which is a requirement under 5108. And 5108 does not distinguish between continuously pursued and non-continuously pursued claims. In fact, you can continuously pursue supplemental claims or filed, you know, pursuant to 5104C81 under 5108. And the 7104B, 7105C also provides an authorization for adjudication based on supplemental claims. And again, they also don't distinguish. So 5108 is the statute that is the source of authority to adjudicate the supplemental claim, whether it's subject to a final or non-final decision. And again, the prerequisite to have the adjudication is to move into relevant evidence, because otherwise, under 7104J105, the secretary would be barred from
the adjudication. But is the authority for the agency of original jurisdiction to the adjudication of the claim, isn't it? And then the Chapter 71 governs the appeal to the board. That's not a 5108 claim. The board has its own re-adjudication standard that incorporates 5108, and that otherwise has a tougher, you know, forbidding standard for adjudication of board decision, but that's not what happened. And it makes sense, right? When you ask the regional office to re-adjudicate a claim that's just adjudicated, it makes, within a year, it makes sense to require new and relevant evidence for them to do that. But the board is hearing this claim for the case, claim, decision for the first time. And the standard is different, isn't it? Doesn't 7104, you have to consider all the evidence standard law?
7105C, Your Honor, is what I believe to be a more relevant provision, which provides that if no notice of disagreement is filed within 1 year of the agency decision, the claim cannot be re-adjudicated or allowed unless. The relevant exception here is 5108, so it points back to 5108. And I would note, even from the appellant's arguments, that both, you know, the Secretary's regulations, which are the Secretary's regulations, in 5108, Congress used the term Secretary and not agency of original jurisdiction, which is used in other statutory provisions related to the 5106 options.
But as we chronicled in green, when the Congress intends for Chapter 51 to apply to the board, they specify the board. Don't use secretary.
That's correct. And 7105C does draw the board back to 5108.
For consideration of supplemental claims from board decisions.
That would be 7104, I believe, would be the supplemental claim filed after a board decision or a board disallowance. 7105C relates to the if no notice of disagreement is filed within 1 year. So those two provisions together are what otherwise bar the re-adjudication of a previously denied claim, regardless of finality or not finality of the underlying decision. So those are the exceptions that permit claims to ultimately continuously pursue their claim. The appellant, in this case, the veteran in this case, had options after the ALJ denied his claim on merits in 2019. He could have, at that time, appealed the denial of the merits to the board and had the board review the merits of the denial. Instead, chose significantly, he was also represented by counsel at the time, he chose to file a supplemental claim, that supplemental claim requiring new and relevant evidence to be submitted in order to justify re-adjudication under 7105, seeing 5108. And Your Honors,
in characterizing new and relevant evidence as a preclusory requirement, isn't the Secretary arguing that there's no jurisdiction?
Your Honor, I'm not sure that we need to address the question of whether it is jurisdictional. We analogized it to the legacy context of 51 out of 8, then I believe that this court has held the federal circuit has recognized the jurisdiction only in support of what was previously new material evidence. 51 out of 8, well, 51 out of 8 changed in the sense that it changed the standards, but otherwise it's some remaining things. But there's certainly an argument that it is a jurisdictional prerequisite, but either way, there's nevertheless a statutory prerequisite in terms of authorizing the secretary to reissue.
Doesn't that actually make your point that it's a throwback to the reopening standard for final disallowed claims under the legacy system that doesn't contemplate the forestalling finality of still having an active original claim, as is the case under the AMA modernized system?
Don't believe so, because Your Honor's point, when all these statutes are read together, there's no tension, there's no conflict. 5110 allows a claimant to receive an effective date tied to an initial claim if that claim is continuously pursued. It's not, 5110 is not a statute that authorizes board review or agency review, it simply just knows the effective dates, and that's not an issue. All of these statutes are read together, they create a system. That system allows a choice. Veteran chose one option, that one option requires new relevant evidence. And part of the AMA, designed to give veterans choices. The veteran could have appealed, could have sought higher level review of the initial agency decision based on the same record. The veteran could have allowed notice of disagreement and chosen one option, options available in terms of board review. But the veteran chose was to file a supplemental claim. And there are potential benefits that come with that. The potential benefit of the duty to assist, which applies to records, just on the filing of a supplemental claim, potentially the full duty to assist to the claims to re-adjudicate. There's the potential benefit of having the AOJ re-adjudicate the merits and then being able to appeal that decision to the board. So there are trade-offs, Your Honor. And the new and relevant evidence requirement is simply a part of that trade-off. The veteran does not necessarily believe that their claim is wrongly decided by the AOJ, but thinks that their claim can be decided more favorably based on additional evidence. They can file a supplemental claim, or the veteran in this case, if he was unsure as to whether he had additional evidence, as well as evidence, could have actually appealed to the board and chosen one of the two board documents.
But it's the secretary's position then if the veteran chooses the supplemental claim lane to try to develop further evidence, and that development fails, notwithstanding the filing, which there happens to be, that underlying claim, the review of that underlying claim is cut off.
Not forever, Your Honor, but based on the appeal is of the decision that is being appealed. And that's clear under statutes and the Secretary's regulations. The Secretary's regulations, I believe, are clear. Find an appeal as an appeal to a decision. Page 7105 requires you to be filed in a year.
So that point is an illustration of a problem with your the Secretary's assertion that the only relevance of the supplemental claim lane is chosen is effective dates. But that's not true because of the forestalling finality aspect. It keeps the claim alive.
Yes.
All the benefits that occur with that.
The veteran's claim was kept alive, and had the veteran provided new and relevant evidence, or should the veteran provide new and relevant evidence in the future if he continues to pursue, or if he continues to pursue, his claim will be vacated. And if he provides that new and relevant evidence in the context of a supplemental claim filed within a year, decision, then this effective date is tied back to the date of the initial claim because that initial claim is never subject to the final adjudication. But that is a downstream question. What was in front of the board was the AOJ's decision on appeal. That was appealed. And the panel item D was of the decision that denied a supplemental claim denying the adjudication.
So, I think you're at the end, you just gave. He's going to answer the question that I have, but I want to make sure that we have a chance to say this directly. In to address Ms. Odom's point about, and I think the department raises you, about one review on appeal, it seems to me from your last answer, what we're basically saying is, you person had a choice, Mr. Boyd had a choice about getting that review by filing an NRB of the initial decision. When he chose to enter into a supplemental claim, essentially, if one review on appeal was of the decision that was made with respect to the filing of the supplemental claim, which was limited to no news and relevant evidence, is that functionally your plan? I just want to make sure I get it.
Yes, and to clarify it, though, suppose appellant absolutely had a right to appeal the 2019 decision that denies the claim on the merits. But what he did was he exercised his rights under 5104C(a)(1), and rather than appealing that decision, he chose to file a supplemental claim in hopes that his claim would be more favorably decided based on additional evidence. Beyond that, the right to one review on appeal is not an absolute unlimited right, because if nothing else, it is limited by time to file the notice of disagreement and validity of the notice of disagreement. So the AMA and the statute that pre-existed it put the ability to exercise that right on the owner and the choices that they make in their pursuit of benefits. And the account chose different option. The option that Congress specifically provided, but an option that does come with a potential drawback. And on that drawback, and I know that is the substance of the issue here, but I emphasize that it is a very minimal risk, right? That the new and relevant evidence standard were incredibly low. And beyond that, there are safeguards that are designed to ensure that veterans understand informed decisions. Some of those include the enhanced notice provisions, which help veterans identify what evidence they need, what issues are still unresolved, the attorney representation at the point in time where a supplemental claim would be filed with the individual suit. How would you represent them? In fact, this amount was represented. Veterans have a year to sign for options. We withdraw the aspect of file.
So keeping with your assertion that the standard for new and relevant evidence is seemingly low, doesn't this case illustrate a problem with the board not engaging with the evidence as 7104A requires when it is used to matter for the first time? Because of the inconsistency between its finding and what the regional office found, and because of the regional office's misstatement of what this new relevant standard is.
Your Honor, if your question is directed at the adequacy of the board's discussion of the issue, then the appellant hasn't challenged that. The appellant hasn't argued any inability to understand and appreciate why the board found that the evidence submitted wasn't new and relevant.
Well, I'm asking it because to find out your view from the Secretary's view of whether it illustrates the systemic problem that occurs when the board doesn't conduct a full review the first time in case history.
Your Honor, I think that is a valid question to be litigated at some point, the extent to which the board is required to discuss the evidence that pre-existed the supplemental claim and afterwards. But that's not an issue that was raised in this particular case. And I think on the face of this case, on the face of this record, the appellant did not submit any evidence that was relevant to the issue of nexus, which was the basis of the original. And the appellant's, the appellant's failure to raise that argument is, if nothing else, I would suggest the appellant understood why, in the face of the evidence submitted, there was nothing new relevant connected to this.
Is that part of the standard? Relevance to a particular issue?
I believe so. I believe the relevant aspect is relevant to the issue that is still decided.
Doesn't it just have to be relevant to the claim?
I believe the Federal Circuit has addressed that. And it also would make little sense for any evidence relevant to any aspect of the plan, because part of the purpose of the AMA was to avoid the relitigation
of a claim based on the same evidentiary record. So it would suggest that the veteran chooses to file a supplemental claim. Presumably, a veteran who is facing select the options for review. The assumption is the veteran is going to choose the option that is most suitable to their needs. The veteran who disagrees with the AOJ decision might file a higher level the veteran disagrees with the AOJ, this is higher level review or file an NRD or pursue a direct review. But again, it's the veteran who doesn't necessarily disagree with the AOJ's decision, but believes that their claim can be decided more favorably based upon additional evidence. They're the ones to supplement the plan being an attractive option. And the veteran still has the option of alternatively filing an NRD with the board and submitting evidence, either the testimony or documentary. But there's, again, the AMA is about choice, and choice is about the trade-offs. If the veteran chose the board review and submitted evidence, then the veteran would not have to rely on the relevant evidence standard, but they wouldn't have the benefit of things like the duty to assist. And they may have had a longer wait time. And their only option afterwards would be if the board disallowed the claim would be to file a supplemental claim. So again, there's advantages and disadvantages. A supplemental claim comes with disadvantages, but the one downside is that the veteran needs to submit that new relevant evidence, which means a very low threshold. And I do new relevant standard is still being waived. So I apologize about that for this meeting.
Were you thinking of the Kaiser case and the pre-formal Kaiser city, where the federal was really talking about what relevant intent?
I was definitely thinking of a case that we could see. It doesn't change the fact that the AMA was designed to promote that efficiency, and one of the things it meant to do was to avoid the constant litigation. Appellant's rights in this case are not being interested in the litigation. Appellant made a choice. Appellant could have, again, appealed the decision that denied his claim in the merits, but he didn't. He sought a different benefit that ended up being re-adjudication based on additional evidence. He simply didn't provide the requisite threshold of evidence, new and relevant, to have his claim being adjudicated. And ultimately, when he filed a notice of disagreement that was filed beyond 1 year, more than 1 year after the original merits decision, and within 1 year of the decision that denied supplemental claim, denied re-adjudication, that AOG provided the board sent to the board the subject matter question of whether re-adjudication should occur, whether there was new relevant evidence. Your Honor, if there are no further questions.
It's okay if you don't lose points if you need some new money on the table here in the time.
No, I just want to make sure that I covered all the important points, but Your Honor, if there are no further questions, we would ask this court to the Prime Secretary's view on the government's statutes and regulations and the court's decision in this case.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. Ms. Oden, you have your problem. And while you're walking there, at some point in your row, I mean, if you do, maybe you do it, can you just let us know whether in your view, Mr. Boyd, appealed the notion of no new and relevant evidence and whether you take any appeal or position on that here? In other words, I read your briefs to say that wasn't the thing that we sought review of. We sought review of the initial decision as opposed to the new relevant evidence determination, but I'm wrong.
Well, Your Honor, I would love to start there.
Two great minds thinking.
I think you're almost there. Our position is not that.
It's the story of my life. So.
Our position is not that Mr. Wade appealed the initial decision. Our position is is that Mr. Lloyd appealed the initial claim. And that's a very important distinction because the board does not review decisions. That's not what the board reviews. The board reviews the claim. We know that, I mean, the statutes play out. We get 5104B, which is the higher level review statute. That talks about the higher level of review authority reviewing decisions. That decision word is missing from at least the relevant part of 7104A. I think it's missing completely from 7104A, but I don't have it in front of me.
Without using the word decision or claim or anything like that, as part of a thing that was before the board, was the question of whether or not what was submitted new and relevant evidence part of the next?
No.
So you are not, okay, let's just, I'm going to take you at your word, okay? So that is not a question that being, did the board sufficiently explain what was new and relevant, all of that,
right,
is not on your docket. That's not what's before the court today.
No.
You mean yes?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not before the court. In your view.
It is not before the court. What is before the court is the board's finding that it had a claim for re-adjudication before it. It did not have a claim for re-adjudication before it. It had the initial claim for left eye compensation before it. And that initial claim, no part of that initial claim is the question of whether there's no issue as to whether there's any relevant evidence. The issues are, is there a current disability? Is there something in service? Is there an accident?
So would one have to do something, let's assume that Mr. Roy got the decision on the supplemental claim, and for whatever reason said, I think the initial claim is probably right, but boy, did they, the RO, the regional office, get it wrong about whether this evidence was new and relevant. And he filed a notice of disagreement following the supplemental claim decision that said no new and relevant evidence. Would he have to then be specific to the board to say, I want you to consider the new and relevant evidence question, that's the thing I'm really appealing?
If that's what the veteran said to the board would have to say, sorry, we have to review the merits of the claim, not new and relevant evidence.
So then nobody ever reviews, under your view, whether or not the agency of original jurisdiction was correct to say that the evidence was not new and relevant?
If it's an initial claim, who cares? Because new and relevant evidence isn't required for the allowance of an initial claim. If it's a 5104CB claim that started the chain of continuous pursuit, then yes. Then
you mean when it comes out?
Exactly, more than a year. Then yes, the board would have to look at that. The big picture here when we're dealing with an initial claim is that the Secretary's position is actually advocating for piecemeal claims adjudication. The board is already looking at the entire RBA, the entire procedural history, and the Secretary agrees that the initial claim is not final. Yet, for some reason, which is unclear how it would be at all helpful to the system or to veterans at large, the board is only required to look at one specific issue, whether there's new and relevant evidence. Even though everybody agrees there's never been a final adjudication, the initial claim is still alive, the board is looking at the entire procedural history and is looking at the entire record, but the board only has to do this one thing, which is to say whether there's new and relevant evidence. That doesn't help the system. It doesn't make it more efficient. It doesn't make things go faster because the board's already doing everything it has to do in looking at initial claim. It certainly doesn't help veterans and claimants who are now held to a higher standard than those other claims for veterans who might have already gone straight to the board satisfied with the state of the record or asked for HLR instead of going out to file a supplemental claim. We also have to keep in mind that not a lot of veterans understand, like, granted Mr. Lloyd was represented, but there are thousands of veterans out there who don't understand what new and relevant means. The regulation does say it has to be evidence that tends to prove or disprove a matter or an issue. What does that mean to your average veteran or claimant who's just trying to get the claim granted? So you have a lot of claims, we've seen it in our own practice, where the veteran will just keep filing supplemental claims. supplemental claims, submitting nothing else, and then just not getting anything any further, especially when it's only like a legal issue. Those questions have to get to the board. So the secretary's position.
So which is it? It sounds now like your argument is morphing a little bit, and you just talked about all these veterans who filed supplementals. Is it that this is your position is what the AMA has always meant and initially meant, or is it that now that you're getting all these supplementals, you're like, shoot, veterans are being, you know, they're being blindsided by this because they thought they could file a supplemental without submitting the material?
It's the AMA is what it already always has meant, but one of the pitfalls of the AMA is that veterans are often think that just filing a supplemental claim is the quickest way to get an allowance of a claim. And so those veterans who just keep filing a supplemental claim will never be able to get to the board on the initial claim under the secretary's view, because once you file that supplemental claim, you're cut off from the board forever on the initial claim, and you never get adjudication or allowance unless you can come up with the relevant evidence. And the reason to draw each...
I think the response would be, but at the end, they just make some choice, and that was a choice they made, even though it was apparently, from the claim you're talking about, was an unintentional choice.
Or, another way to put that, for me, I mean, does the flip side of choice be consequence? That there's a consequence that can flow from a choice?
Congress made clear, though, that you have successive choices. One choice cannot are your future choices. In other words, the choice to initially file a supplemental claim following the initial decision cannot bar you from getting to the board on that initial claim. You have the right to successive choices. Also, the secretary's position is inconsistent with the statutory language itself. Like I said, the board doesn't review decisions, so it's not a decision that was on the appeal. And furthermore, the secretary's whole argument seems to turn on 7105C1C2, which doesn't say anything about irrelevant evidence, and again is missing that really important phrase, re-adjudication or allowance. The only way that you get re-adjudication or allowance under 5108 is if there's new irrelevant evidence. So that Congress's omission of that phrase from 7105C2 has to be taken as a deliberate choice. And what it's telling us is that new and relevant evidence is not the end all be all. Veterans are allowed to file for different choices and try to get the claim adjudicated and allowed for these different avenues, and one does not cut off the right to the rest of them. Thank you,
Ms. Jones. Before I say that the case is submitted, you can sit down. I just want to say that to the people in the crowd. The court usually, when adopted as a custom in our court, one that developed in the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, where we would normally come down and shake counsel's hand, and then we bench. We're going to forego that for a couple of reasons, not the least of which the last I walk in my room, the best chance there is that I fall and make a fool of myself. But in reality, what we're doing is we want to leave the time for the question and answer session that we're going to have for you all. And so that's what we're going to do immediately after. In a second, I'm going to hit this gap, but I'm going to say the case is submitted. And that will, I think Tiffany will then say that the court is no longer in session. And then we're going to just stay up here and answer your questions. And I encourage you to ask questions. So with that, I'm going to say the case is submitted.
The court is in recess.